A conversation on race in Connecticut. Lisa Wexler talks to Bridgeport civic activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Love to hear from you today. 203-333-9422 is our numero de telefono. Did you see this story? It's one of the most popular things to make the rounds, that Brookfield, Connecticut, which was the place of a real-life Connecticut murder trial, is an inspiration for a new movie called The Conjuring. Are you a fan of horror movies? I can't stand them. They scare me to death. But a 19-year-old named Arnie Cheyenne Johnson, claims he was possessed by the devil when he stabbed Alan Bono several times in the chest and stomach, killing him. He was the 40-year-old owner of a Brookfield kennel. And anyway, the supernatural element is being upsold in the new movie, The Conjuring. It happened in 1981, and Brookfield had never had a murder in its own town before, much less one where the defense claimed demonic possession. And it was the first time, according to The Hour, that this line of reasoning had been used to argue a murder case. So The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It debuts in theaters on Friday. It is, quote, loosely based on this bizarre bit of Connecticut history. Personally, I cannot stand horror movies. Joining us right now is Wayne Winston for our weekly conversation on race. Hello, Wayne. Welcome to the show today. Good morning.
Thank you so much. And I have a comment about the family there, you know, in the supernatural.
Tell me.
I was working at Crazy Eddie. I managed their video department, audio, over here on Main Street in Bridgeport. And this couple come in, and he's, you know, looking to buy the stereo equipment. I know pretty much, you know, I knew a lot of stuff about it. So the wife is like, boy, you know a lot about this equipment. I said, yeah, you know. And she says, what else you do? And I told her what I did. She says, you know, why don't you come to work with us? I think you could do a great job. And I'm going like, okay. I'm like, okay, what do you do? And she starts going, oh, we do the supernatural stuff. And I was like, hold on right there. Maybe there's some things I don't need to know about because I'm not that guy. My curiosity just doesn't go that far to be going into all of the supernatural stuff. But, you know, God bless you guys. They were really nice. They invite me over to dinner. I'm like, no, I don't think I'm going to dinner either. So that's my
story. Oh, you're kidding me.
It's just the God's honest truth. I came home and told my family, they go like, no way. I'm like, yeah, man, I was not going to work. You sitting in one of them rooms going, hey, you feeling cold in here? I don't know. I'm going to be home. I'm not going to know because I don't want to know.
So wait a minute. Are you saying it was like a Get Out kind of a scenario, that movie, that fabulous movie where the guy is invited to somebody's house for dinner and he, you know, becomes involved in a horrible situation? Are you saying that this nice looking couple came to you at Crazy Eddie's years ago and invited you over to their house and you thought, holy cow, I might be walking into a horror movie? Is that what you're saying, Wayne?
I'm saying it was that family right there, that couple, that are the legendary couple from Connecticut that have gone all over the world checking out these crazy stories of supernatural. They wanted to hire me from my electronic experience to go and investigate haunted houses.
Oh, wow.
Yes,
look at that, right. The road not taken. And that, you know what? One of the most popular, I think, television reality series are not Ghostbusters, but something like Ghostbusters, Ghost Hunters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They seem perfectly nice, normal people. And you're like, no, this vibe isn't for me. This is not for me.
They were nice and they were very successful because, you know, around about that time they had the thing going on. I think it was like on Lindley Street. They're supposed to be a cat talking in a house or something else in the newspaper. And this was probably like 6 months later. And they were, you know, shopping for some electronic stereo stuff. And I gave them the information and said, you should come with us. You know, we're all over
the
thing right now.
You know, Wayne, there are apps that purport to find What do they call those? What do they call those things? Poltergeists, little ghosts that yes. and spirits that are around you that you may not know, but there are these apps that, you know, theoretically tell you that they're there.
Yeah, they would need one of those. They were nice people, but no, I could not
for you.
Go do it. I was like, that's not for me. Not many things scare me, okay? I stand on my side of the fence when it comes to that stuff. It's like, okay. And we have these great machines, you know, and it's easy. You know, you just read the meter. Oh, listen, that sounds fantastic. But, you know, that's just not my thing. We should
that's
come
not
over.
Your thing.
Talk about it.
You pass.
Yeah, the world
of the supernatural. You know, I'm always dipping my toe into it because I love talking to mediums because I really believe that my grandparents are around me and my loved ones that have passed are around me. I feel them mm-hmm. and I really believe that they come through with messages and they talk to me. And maybe that makes me a crackpot, but I really do believe it. It's very part of my essence. And that would be considered supernatural for sure. But it doesn't make me scared. It actually makes me feel happy.
And it's accepting that as your loved ones. And I believe that our families and their spirits are alive as well. That come to us and look out for us. I believe that 100.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to go looking for everybody else's, you know.
I get it. No, listen, I totally get it. And you don't know what you're going to find, right? And there may be the good ones that have passed in our families have a nurturing, beautiful presence, but maybe there are some not good ones and who wants to be around that energy? I totally get that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wayne, we have a lot to catch up on today because there has been a flurry of legislation coming out of Hartford that has really dealing with the reckoning of prejudice. We have Pride Month, which is being celebrated with a big flag atop the Capitol and a tremendous bipartisan, every kind of diversity show of support for the gay community and the transgender community and communities that identify themselves that are not traditional heterosexual communities. And there's been just a celebration of them and an intolerance of prejudice against them. And then we have, specifically with race, a very big bill, declaring race as a public health issue. And I wanted to talk about that with you because I wanted to ask you whether or not it's just having that statement, race is a public health issue. How does that resonate with you? How do you interpret that?
You know, for years, people have looked at racism as something being an isolated incident. You know, how much, you know, can it hurt? You know, you say a couple things to somebody and, you know, they just move on and, you know, just go like, hey, you know, but that was then, this is now, you know, I sent you something from the AMA, which literally declares that racism is a problem and is a health crisis. And they also note that some of it came from them because of the stereotypes that happened for so long. And this is direct from the AMA. They've got a video on it, and I did send it to you. You know, when we have young people, children, for example, we know that if you bully a child, and you bully them even a short time in their life, the rest of their lives, even though it happened when they were teenagers or children, they have all types of psychological, emotional issues and so on. Imagine a whole group of people that they live their whole lives being marginalized, no matter who they are, no matter what they accomplish, that they're not as good as their white counterparts. You know, Tulsa is the perfect example of that, where here's this town that's built during segregation off of black dollars, off of black people who were segregated, who weren't supposed to be part of the main society, create their own wealth just by doing business with each other and creating their own schools and becoming prosperous. And it was said that the dollar went 9 times throughout their community before it left it. With black people doing business with black people. Meanwhile, the surrounding community with the white people in it were just jealous. I mean, they had pianos and new cars and all this. and given a reason. And it's the typical one throughout these things, because Tulsa wasn't the only one. There was one in Rosewood, and there's one in North Carolina I just found out about recently that is on YouTube. They wanted a reason, and they looted the places. They looted those homes before they went and set them on fire. And they literally took 40 blocks of a town and bombed them with the crop dusters. And they used turpentine bombs. You know, that's a huge accelerant. And they shot men, women, and children, all for what? Jealousy, hatred, and racism. So,
and by the way, I wanted to ask you about this, Wayne. Tell me, was this a Ku Klux Klan thing? Was this an organized white supremacist organization? How did this happen?
These were just townspeople. You know, you got to figure, you know, the horrible thing of racism is that it makes you feel someone shouldn't have something that you don't have. It's a form of jealousy you can actually act out. You know, if you have this, I can take it from you. If it's your something you own, even if it's a person, because they would never be prosecuted because black people had no rights that white Americans had to respond to or observe legally. Now, that was the law then as well. That's why no one was ever arrested. In fact, the National Guard came in and they were supposed to protect the town. The gentleman who owned the hotel there begged the National Guardmen, don't let them come into this hotel, which is a super successful hotel in town. And the first thing they did, as soon as they left, they went and destroyed it. These were just regular people. The sheriff deputized people in the community and they just went and did it. You know, you don't have to belong to an organization in order to, you know, jump into this, you know, this mob violence psychology. And when you start shooting people and blowing up things, it's unfathomable right now. But that's what happens when you have hate in a place where you can just vent this stuff out. And none of that stuff was made up. And you can see those people still alive today.
They're it's remarkable. Right they had three people aged 101 to 107. I mean, it's just remarkable that these people are alive to be honored enough that their memory is being, you know, tapped to be able to talk about this. It's just I was very happy to see that President Biden went to Tulsa and made it a national moment yesterday. And it's getting national news because it is a story that until a year ago, I never heard of myself. And I'm a pretty educated person and I didn't know about it. And that tells you that my education did not include this story. And I think that going forward, it's safe to say that other school children growing up will learn about it. And they should. They should learn about it. It's important.
And that goes back into, do we really want to teach American history the way that it really has been? Let me back up. Do we want to continue teaching American history the way it has been, making deities of people and not observing some of the mistakes? You know, black people have been subjugated by law more time than not in this country from the inception. You know, maybe 20, if you figure out the math, maybe 30% from like the 60s on, you know, really broke through the rest of those laws, you know, up until now, 40, 50 years. You know, our country's a little over 400 or 500 years old, and this is a young country compared to the rest of the world. And yet we're the most powerful, and we use slave labor and racism to create it and get where we are today, and we were excluded from it. And you think of the generational wealth that that family lost. Those people lost all of that. They couldn't give that to their children or their grandchildren or their children's children. They could get no parts of it. And that's what the tragedy is, as we're talking about, you know, why don't black people do this and why aren't they, haven't they done this? And if they only didn't steal and all this other stuff, I mean, the psychology that you had to live through, even when you came back from war, you still weren't seen as equal. And because the war was going on at the same time, you know, the Second World War. And it's like, the Red Tails are out there fighting, you know, the Nazis, and they come back and they still are not able to not just sit down and eat, but they're spat upon. They're still hung. That's one of the times in our country where we had spikes of racism that were happening against the soldiers who would come back saying, listen, I bled for this country. And by standing up, there was a whole probably 5 to 10 years of horrible lynchings that happened because those white communities were going to say, stay in your place.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We're chatting with Wayne Winston. What you're talking about, to me, reminds me of the conversation about reparations. And I'm wondering whether or not Tulsa intends to pay any, because it seems to me that that is a reasonable way of addressing the generational wealth that was taken away from these families. They know who they are. They may not get everyone, but they know who they are. It seems to me that it's 100 years ago, but it's not 1,000 years ago, that it would have not just an emotional resonance, but a true financial one in terms of paying back the community for some of their lost wealth. And I know that there are advocates for it, but I was just looking up to see if Tulsa has any intention of doing it. I think that they should do it.
Now, according to the mayor, and I've only seen what you've seen in my research and so on, he believes that the problem with that would be, where would the money come from the town? You know, there's X amount of dollars in town. How can we pay them back? You know, we have to, you know, and that's the tragedy of it. You know, the worth they were saying of that town was somewhere like around $20 million, which in our time was, you know, much, much more. You know, obviously you can't replace all of that. And it goes from 40 blocks. Now they have one block. And, you know, the people who are disenfranchised, and they didn't speak about it because they knew if they could come in once and do it, they could come back and finish it off. So that's why all of these, this time later, they can finally talk about it. But that's where reparations across this country is. There are parts of this country, especially in the South, and in the South, I mean, Texas and so on, where, you know, white people came in and just took their land and just gave it to someone else. And they lost everything that they had. It happened over and over and over and over. Insurance companies never paid the people of Tulsa, you know, even though they had insurance with them. And these are major insurance companies that are around now. Maybe that's part of seeking them out and making them do the right thing based upon what they can figure out. But it always gets down to the money. And on the other side, the people who are so adamantly opposed about it, they're still saying, no, we shouldn't give black people anything that was then and this is now, and they should just suck it up and live with it.
Yeah, well, and that you're right. I mean, and that's the conversation. But I think that the conversation about reparations is not going to go away. We're chatting with Wayne Winston. We'll be right back for more of this conversation. Stay tuned. I'm Lisa Wexler, 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.
A conversation on race in Connecticut. Lisa Wexler talks to Bridgeport civic activist Wayne Winston. Now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. Wayne Winston joins us. I want to let you know that by a 114-33 vote, a new bill has been passed in Connecticut. It hasn't been signed by the governor yet. It was approved on Tuesday, yesterday. And here's what it does. It requires better data collection on race and ethnicity in healthcare. Tony Wong talked a little bit about that. We drilled into the details in the first hour. If you want to hear that, please listen on SoundCloud this evening when the entire show will be posted as a podcast. It mandates that hospitals conduct implicit bias training for employees who provide direct care to pregnant or postpartum women. That's because there have been studies that show a direct correlation between the kind of health care that women of color receive in this state versus white women. It requires that the public health commissioner study the development of a recruitment and retention program for state health care workers who are people of color. I would like to drill into the details of that. Does that mean that black health care workers are going to get bonuses to stay versus white health care workers not get bonuses? That could create some problems within an organization. I'd like to know what that's about. It's going to direct the health department to explore whether to create a certification process for doulas. Those are individuals, typically women, that help women through childbirth and early child and early newborndom. And the measure also establishes a gun intervention and prevention advisory committee to consult with community groups, victim service providers, researchers, and others to identify strategies for reducing gun violence. The panel would be required to submit a report on its findings and recommendations by January 1st of 2022. So they need to get to work very, very quickly. Wayne, they're going to be busy for the next 6 months. Wayne, are you going to get on that committee? What do you think? And or do you know anybody who's already going to be on it? What do you think?
I think that would be an interesting committee. I can tell you, you know what? I'd love to be on it. I know of a couple people that they're thinking of, and the ones that are there, I mean, I think they'll do a great job. The thing we're talking about, the pay for Black employees, it had to do with the disparate pay, that they weren't getting paid as much as their white counterparts. Now, how they're going to figure that out, I guess they look at what they paid the white guy, the same experience, or the white person, and figure it that way. That's my understanding.
Well, listen, there's nothing wrong with equalizing, but if you're going to incentivize, that's why I say the devil's in the details here. If you're going to incentivize Black people to stay, you're going to demoralize white people who are already there. You're going to have to figure out a way that makes it feel to everyone like it's fair. Whatever fairness is, it has to feel fair. Otherwise, it gets under people's skin, so to speak, and it exacerbates existing tensions. It doesn't work in the right direction.
I agree. And I think what's happening in our communities, even having programs that lean us towards, it's such a secure job, the medical field right now, whether it's CMA or anything and EMS, it's a very secure field. And I don't think we've done enough in our cities to encourage people of color to go that direction. And we're just in a different psychology when it comes to what the options are. I think it's happening in our high schools. There's so much of a different dynamic, even in our high schools, say a Trumbull High School or Fairfield High School, the exposure that they get versus a Bridgeport, which has a huge amount of students, and that kind of stuff gets taken for granted. That's the benefit of having, a more affluent school system. So there's little nuances that are there. And I wanted to say we were doing some, race talks, here. In Trumbull, we started one, and it's been pretty phenomenal, because part of what Tulsa is, it's a reflection of why we need to have the right history taught, so that we can see each other as equals, we can see each other as human beings, that we can admit its mistakes. The United States itself is just like, if you look at it, it's the most phenomenal country on the planet, even geographically. It is the sweet spot. There's no other continent like it. North America, we got California on one end with all of the beautiful sunshine, San Diego, you go all the way across. We're in the middle of the North American continent. On the other side, we've got Connecticut and so on, Maine and all that. You go down to bottom, you got Florida. We have all the climates. We've got desert. We've got every type of thing that you can have, climate and opportunity. No other continent even has that, plus the natural resources. So I understand why this country prospers, and I understand why they did what they did, except they wounded and they hurt a generation of people and singled out Black people for generations to say, you'll bear the brunt of building it, but you won't prosper from it because you're subhuman. And we still have a lot of those stereotypes today, and that's what we're finding. So these talks that we have every Wednesday, the next one's on the 9th, there'd be great people in there, man, sharing stories, because we need them to know that you have to see us as a friend, you have to see us as a neighbor, because a lot of people, white people, have people in their community, but they don't really talk to them that way. They work with them, but getting down to those uncomfortable conversations, we really fight to have that conversation America needs. And I thank you on this station for doing it, because it's not an easy thing. And I know everyone doesn't always agree with us or me or whatever, but that's what it's for.
Yeah, so I want to hear more. We've got only a minute, Wayne. Tell us, if we want to watch the conversation, if not participate in it, how do we find out more about these race conversations? Who's in them, by the way? Is it you and just a bunch of people who sign on, or do you always have guest speakers? Like, what's it about? But you've only got a minute.
Gotcha. We do Zoom. I host it. We talk about something from the past history that has to do with understanding what racism is, how we got here. We do have guests that come in, but people from that are in within the Zoom itself can ask a question or be part of the conversation as well, because we want a comfortable, safe place to talk. So, yes, that would be the answer. And we do have guests, and we had someone came from a corporate background, graduated from Harvard and Yale. He got ran for mayor around here. He's a phenomenal guy. He's an African-American, and the glass ceiling that he hit, and how to be in the middle without looking like being the angry black man, without being too pushy, even when he wound up with a white female who was his boss. And like, she's like, hey, you know, you got to be a little tougher. And when he gets tougher, he's kind of like, oh, back up. And he's been an executive for Dell, and I mean executive. For Dell.
So, Wayne, do you put this on your Facebook page if people want to friend you on Facebook? Is that the simplest way to find out the link? Okay, Wayne Winston on Facebook, and you can find it, and we'll reshare it on our Lisa Wexler show. Thanks, Wayne. We'll be back behind the mic tomorrow. Stay tuned for Paul Pacelia, too. You're listening to WICC.